Kingway, Fox, Beard, look is acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. He's a bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wet, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We hung about a theory. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about a theory. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about a theory. Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means we are live, and that means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking. Right now, 646-668-2433 is our number, and you definitely want to get that on speed dial, and you definitely want to call, because tonight we have a special treat for you, the man, the myth, the legend himself, the one, the only, Michael Jan Friedman is live in the studio with us, and I'm sure you have questions for him, so give us a call, 646-668-2433. And we'll get you on the line with the one and only Michael Jan Friedman. But before we do that, I want to go around and introduce you to my awesome Trexperts. We'll start off with Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing really good, Jim, except that I'm starting to kind of feel that itch of it being too many weeks without new Star Trek happening. I mean, thank goodness I've got some comics to kind of tide me over. And of course I have, you know, 55 years of canon to draw upon anyway to sort of tide me over. But man, it was so luxurious to have so much new Trek for so long. And I'm starting to feel that itch. You know what I mean?
2 weeks.
Two weeks
until Picard.
That's all I got to wait. Oh man, I'm never going to make it. I'm never going
to
make
close.
It.
It's right around there. You can smell it. You can almost smell it. It's so close. We also have on the line with us Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul? Did we lose Paul?
Paul is muted. Too bad, because he's very witty.
we had Paul. Paul was there. Paul went.
This is what you get with a live show. Sometimes Paul disappears. Yeah. Sometimes Paul comes back. You never know.
Well, Paul shows up on my switchboard as being here.
We'll continue on.
We'll
figure it out.
Right.
We'll come back.
Sorry, guys. Technical difficulties beyond my control. God almighty. We have all this technology, and they want you to think it works. And this is the problem with growing up watching endless hours of Star Trek. You expect everything just to be perfect and that everything will operate as you were expecting it to. Eric, you're just going through what we think of as Star Trek foreplay right now, right? You're kind of basically, you're between the exciting parts of the date. You're going to have more episodes in just a couple weeks, so hang in there, man, okay?
Yep. Just got to last.
Enjoy the suspense. The ketchup will be pouring out of the bottle before you know it.
What you got to do is you got to go to your local Walmart or Target and check out all the awesome Playmates toys, Star Trek toys that you can find there, like the Enterprise, the Phaser, that kind of stuff.
There's so many good toys out there, and honestly, I'm kind of always on a constant watch through. So there is a certain point in time that I marked myself right now, which happens to be season 4 DS9, where I'm kind of like just watching through the whole situation, right? So there's always a place to go, but that new Trek itch is something special.
Yeah. Well, a couple of weeks, just hang in there. And last but definitely not least, we have our very own Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. The weather's probably starting to break up. We might see 60s by the weekend, finally. I'm tired of these 30s in the morning. And trucks like the rain, Eric. You can smell it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to hear something?
With teasers. They've been hitting us with teasers, so you know what's coming.
I know. Looks good, too.
Mother Nature is so out of whack right now that up here in Vermont, we're expecting 40 below zero with wind chill factor, 51 below up in Saranac Lake where Leslie is. And then on Monday, it's going to be 43. Go figure. You know?
That's weird. That's an 80-degree swing. That feels different. Feels weird.
Totally out of whack. She's just out of whack.
Hey, you be happy you didn't get the rain and the snow that we sent down the south and Midwest this week.
Not yet, but you never know. The week is still young.
Yeah.
Anyways, guys, before we dive right in, we want to talk just a little bit about AlienCon.
AlienCon is back. Join us March 4th through 5th at the Pasadena Convention Center for a weekend of exploration and meet your favorite experts from Ancient Aliens, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, The Unexplained, and The Proof is Out There. Tickets at thealiencon.com.
Now, Paul, if there's any fans out there listening that want tickets for absolutely free weekend passes to go to AlienCon and listen to our past shows, read our blog, just say hello to us, how would they do that?
You just love setting me up for this, don't you, Jim? Well,
I do.
Crazy cats and kittens, all you got to do is basically go to one place and you can do all of those fun things that Uncle Jim is intimating at. You're going to go to trektalking.com. Now put the G on the end. Don't go Trek Talking. It's Trek Talking. Say the whole thing, trektalking.com, and you can go there and you can get access to whatever you need, all of our past shows, et cetera, et cetera. But there's like a little microphone icon, right? And if you go there, you can leave a recorded message. And I'm of the impression that whoever leaves the zaniest, most alien-obsessed message is going to score those tickets to go to AlienCon in California. We're going to meet people like Eric Von Daniken, the Eric Von Daniken. It's unbelievable. You know, I'm not saying anything's going to happen with, you know, Gillian Anderson. I don't know any of that stuff. But just go. I think you should go if you're an alien fan. But we're making it easy. Uncle Jim's enabling you. Just go leave a funny message or a crazy message or an I'm being abducted message. You figure that out. But we know you can do it, and you'll walk away with some pretty sweet tickets to a historical event.
But the truth is out there. So just head on over and leave us a message. And you know what the best part is? They're digital tickets. So once you win them, I just email you the link, and boom, you're there. It's that simple. So do it. Don't wait. Go and do it now. Right now. And one more little thing I want to mention. I forgot to update the numbers tonight, so I apologize for that. But I have been in contact. We are going to be giving away in the not-too-distant future DVDs of Season 1 of Strange New World. That's right. You heard me right. We are going to have DVDs of Strange New World Season 1 to give to you. So stay tuned to our Facebook page. Listen to the podcast for information on how to win one yourself. But if I was a betting person, I would say that the way you're going to win them is by heading over to trektalking.com and leaving us a message and telling us why you should have it. If I was a betting man, I would say that.
Wow. So we have become so predictable.
As soon as we finish up our AlienCon giveaway, we will be going right into our Strange New Worlds DVD giveaway. So,
excellent. Sounds great.
Tuned. All right, guys. So without any further ado, here he is. Fiction and nonfiction, more than half of which tie-in products to the Star Trek franchise. 10 of his titles have appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. He has also written for network and cable television, radio, and more than 150 comic books, most of them for DC Comics. Here he is, the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Jan Friedman. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing pretty good.
Good to be here.
I I wanted to start off the show by saying something to you that maybe you remember, but probably not. Way, way, way back in 1991, I hosted my very first Star Trek convention in Albany, New York, and I had two guest Star Trek authors that were at the convention. Of course, we have Marina Sirtis and Mark Leonard as the main Star Trek guests, but I had two Star Trek authors at my first convention. One of them was the late Carmen Carter. And take a while guessing who the other one was.
Are you going to say it was me?
It was you. And so I just wanted to say thank you. It's been a long time, and you probably don't remember that. But I just wanted to say thank you for making my first Star Trek convention in 1991 such a huge success. And you and Carmen Carter really played well together when we had our authors panel. So I want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you for having me. And Carmen.
And Carmen. And speaking of conventions, by the way, a friend of ours is having a convention in Long Island called Trek Long Island. And I hear through the grapevine that you're going to be there.
That grapevine, boy, it's like you can hear things on the intercom and you're not sure if it came from the captain or not, but you hear it on the grapevine and it's got to be the truth. Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Yep. And of course, Trek Talking, yours truly, Uncle Jim, is going to be there as well. And it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you guys want to meet Michael Jan Friedman in person, then you can head over to Trek Long Island. And by the way, if you go to trektalking.com, you can find a link right there that will take you right to their webpage so that you can pick up some tickets and make sure that that happens. So other than Trek Long Island, anything else going on that you want to mention?
Well, actually in about a week, I'm going to be at Farpoint, which is a convention just north of Baltimore. In the Hunt Valley, and that's always a blast. So anybody who hasn't been there should make it their business at some point to go. It's a great family-run convention. But right now, even as we speak, I'm running a Kickstarter campaign for my latest collection of short stories. It's called Thelas and Other Stories, and that's Thelas. And it's a collection of science fiction, fantasy, superhero stories, and I'm pumped about it. And the Kickstarter campaign is about $650 away from our goal, and we have 4 days left, and it's getting to be crunch time. But I'm not nervous. Do I sound nervous? I'm not nervous. I'm a little nervous.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, all right. That's deceptive. I'm actually very, very nervous about this. We need some help. We need some help. So anybody who's out there, if you've read my stuff and you'd like to see more of it, please chip in and get us over the finish line.
And how can they? How can people help out with that? Where can they find the information on that?
Well, it's if they go to Kickstarter and they look for the word, the name Thelas, Thelas, it's Thelas and Other Stories. They have that little search magnifying glass symbol. And if you go to that, you click on that and you put in Thelas and Other Stories, it'll take you to the campaign page, whereupon you'll see a gorgeous piece of artwork that'll be part of what graces our cover, if and when we get this thing, funded. It's actually by a guy named Rudy Au. He's a Philippine artist, and he did an amazing rendition of a scene from one of the stories in the book.
Excellent. That sounds great. Now, hopefully at Trek Long Island and Farpoint, you'll have more information available
Well, I will, but by that time, the campaign will be over. So we only have four days left. So you know, I'll be obliged to anybody who hears the program and scoots over there and finds a reward. You know, what I like to do in these campaigns is give backers a chance to do things that they can't do when they walk into a bookstore and pick out a book. For instance, they can get in the one-time mention category, they can name a street or a character or someone in the stories. So if, you know, let's say your significant other has a birthday coming up, you can put them in the book, which is a great thing that you really can't do anywhere else. Other than in these campaigns.
So what you're saying is that for a donation, you could potentially get somebody you know into a book?
Someone you know or you.
Oh, my gosh.
Most people actually put themselves in, but sometimes it's a you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, something like that, wife.
Can you arrange husband. To have a coworker violently killed? Is that possible? like if I wanted to have Eric like get torn apart by some kind of space octopus, could I arrange for you to do that? Is that possible?
We could talk about that after the show.
Excellent,
brother.
Oh, so the wheels are spinning now.
I rule it out. Okay, I wouldn't rule it out.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
But in you know, and for at a little higher level, you can actually make that person a character in the book. You know, where it's not just a one-time mention, they become a full-fledged character in that book, in every edition of the book, and they're permanently ensconced in that story, like it or not. And then there's another level where, and this is popular too, where you can send me, you know, at another level of pledge, you can send me some photos of you or that other person, and our artists depict the scene from one of the stories with that person's likeness in it, and it's great. Because, you know, you're flipping through the book and all of a sudden you go, oh, my God, that's me in that scene. And it's a great thing that we can do that you wouldn't see in a book that you buy from, you know, off the store shelves.
Well, and Michael, I hate to jump in here, but like the level of donation that we're talking about here is not like millions of dollars, right? We're talking about like very reasonable donations, and you know, the opportunity to maybe write the dedication for the book, is that still available? That seems
that
crazy.
Yeah, it is actually still available.
Wow.
You can people have done that. You know, they've written the dedication to somebody that's near and dear to them, and you know, it's again, it's something that you can't get anywhere else. And if they, you know, especially if they're a fan of my work and they get to dedicate a book that I've written, it's you know, it could be special.
And you know, I don't want to. I'm sorry to jump in again here, but like mm-hmm. You're talking about the levels that are available. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but for $100 or more, I can get you on the horn for 40 minutes and I can talk about my writing with you and get your feedback on what's going on in my mind's eye. My writing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, in the past I've actually had a level where, you know, you send me something and I comment on it, but that, you know, that option can be used any way you want. I'm yours for 40 minutes. So, you know, you can Zoom with me and we can talk. You can send me something in advance. I'll read it. We can talk about it. Or you could just talk to me about sports or any of the other, you know, weird things I'm into, like ice sailing. I mean, if you're up in Vermont, you know about ice sailing. Right?
Wait, what is ice sailing?
It's also known as hard water sailing, just to give you an idea. It's you go out on a frozen lake and in a rig that sort of, it's sort of like two skates, two big skates joined in the middle, and there's a sail, and you sail on the ice as you would on the water. It's crazy, I know.
That sounds amazing.
So like a catamaran kind of a thing.
It's like a catamaran. It is. It looks like a cat, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and you go fast. You go like three times the wind speed because you're not drawing any water. You have very little friction to speak of, so you go pretty quickly. You just have
very
to be
cool,
careful.
Man.
Just got to watch out for the soft spots in the ice.
And don't forget your helmet.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
But anyway, but this, you know, this is the book itself is something that, you know, I'm only accountable to me. There is no company telling me what I, you know, no publisher telling me what I can and can't put in. And so you get the unvarnished, authentic stories that I would want to read. There's in addition to the story in the title, Thelos, there are superhero stories. For instance, one's called Veneer, and it's about a guy who has we'll just say it's an Iron Man type suit. He hasn't worn it in a while, and some people near and dear to him are threatened, and he's got to put on the suit to save them. But the problem is he's got this weird form of claustrophobia, which actually I have, and he can't tolerate anything constraining him against his skin.
Yeah.
And I'm actually plagued by that. And so here's a guy who can put on a suit and save his loved ones, except he can't put on the suit because of this intolerance. So that's called Veneer, and that's one of the stories in the book.
I love that because it brings that, like, total human element to it, right? Like the reality of how an actual person might have some situation that, you know, best intentions forward, they just can't execute because there's some limitation.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I like to do that. You'll find that in a number of my stories, fantasy, science fiction, superhero stories, whatever they are. I like to take something real and introduce it into an unreal situation. Like a superhero situation or, you know, fighting a dragon or, you know, out in a space battle or something like that. In one of my previous short story collections, it was called Headless and Other Stories, basically. And it was about a species of extraterrestrial who's serving aboard a Star Trek type ship. His problem is that his species is like the praying mantis in that during the procreation act, the female bites the male's head off. And these species, in this species, the male has some backup systems, but they're not nearly as good as his original head. So he's trying to get back into the fleet and perform his duties on the ship. But of course he has the significant impediment of having no head.
I love it.
So I'm always,
I hate
trying
it when
to
that
do
happens.
Something like that.
I know.
Yeah. Right. Right.
God, I'm always it slows your whole day down.
Could be, it could, it wrecks your social life.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember, like, all of the stories you have written? I mean, you're listed as one of the prolific, you know, Star Trek writers for sure. I mean, you have so many pocketbooks to your name and you have all the comic books and everything. Do you remember all of the stories that you actually write? Like, how do you prevent yourself from repeating stuff you've done over and over again?
You know, it's a good question. I think I can think of an idea and decide if it's something I've never done before. But there are times when people come up to me at conventions and say, you know what, I love that book that you did. And I go, oh, yeah, I remember the book. And you go, and the person says, yeah, you remember how when Spock was up against that thing, remember how you did that? And
details.
And it takes me a while to figure out what that was. Which is great, because at some point I'll be able to go back and read all the stuff I've written and be surprised, because I just don't remember it all.
I can't imagine that any normal human being would. I mean, I didn't know if you had some sort of like super, you know, photographic memory or something that allowed you to actually remember all the details, because to me, the sheer volume of stuff that you've produced would be prohibitive to that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a great problem to have, no doubt. But it is it's a challenge. Sometimes I have to go back and research something I've written in order to write a sequel, because I just don't remember the original material well enough, and I don't want to screw it up, because it's my stuff. You know, so I have to go back and research it and see exactly how I did something before I build on that.
And I would guess that there's a pretty interesting balance between the ideas that you generate and the ideas that you are asked to write about. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I mean, mostly it's what I've proposed. Occasionally, it'll be an adaptation or something that has to fit neatly into a particular hole. But even then, I have leeway in terms of how I want to do it. For instance, I adapted the final two-part episode of the Next Generation series, right? All Good Things. And when you adapt something, about half of the book is going to be, if it's a movie or a two-part episode, about half of it is going to be just a matter of translating the script into prose. But the other half is, you know, what you want it to be, what fits with that. I remember, for instance, I did the adaptation of the Scotty episode, Relics. I had a lot of material where they were in the Dyson sphere, because they never did that in the episode, but I can do that. I had the budget to
yep.
put them in that Dyson
right.
sphere. You know,
takes you zero dollars to do that.
It
right,
was zero.
It
was actually
yeah.
zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you have to even when you're doing something as derivative as an adaptation, you still have to provide new material, and there you have options.
So what I'm understanding is that most of the time, other than adaptations, when somebody comes to you and says, Michael Jan Friedman, I need you to write me a book, you have a lot of autonomy at that point often?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I mean, sometimes you still have to get it approved, and some of the publishers and licensors that you work with, some of them are very, you know, loosey-goosey, sure, do whatever you like. And some of them are very, very rigorous in how they look at what you're proposing. And, you know, if you respect the material, that helps a lot. You know, you don't try to mock it in some way, like,
yeah.
Oh, this is a silly thing. Well, I'll just do this. you know, you, if you take it seriously, you're halfway there.
Well,
Michael,
and,
have you ever?
Oh yeah,
go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was just curious. It's like, because this is an interesting subject. It's like, have you ever wanted to do something, a premise with an existing character? Right, you were talking about doing adaptations, and mm-hmm. and had somebody either from publishing or whatever say, hey, no, you can't do that. We don't. That goes against our thing for, you know, whatever the Bible is for that. Have you ever gotten pushback for something you wanted to do as far as story with a character?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wrote the Next Generation comic for DC, and I would submit six plots at a time, and typically, you know, four would get approved, one where they would say, no, we're doing that already, you can't do it, we're doing it already, and another one where they would say, you can't do it, and we can't tell you why.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then eventually you would find out, oh, now I see why I couldn't do that, because it conflicts with something, or the guy's not alive anymore, or something along those lines.
I can't have that character get married. They're going to get killed in the next week's
episode.
Yeah.
One time I did I proposed a four-part comic series, Klingon-based, kind of Worf-centric story called Shadowheart, which is actually one of the add-on rewards in the campaign. And we were in season six already of Next Generation, and they had mentioned that Worf had a human brother, but they hadn't told us anything about it. They hadn't elaborated. So I said, okay, fair game. I proposed this thing. It's got Worf's human brother in it, and they approved it. And then as I was writing, so four issues, I was writing issue three. Issue one had already been penciled and inked and lettered, and they were laying out issue two already, and we get a script, or DC Comics gets a script with Worf's human brother. And it's like, wait a second, we're doing that already, and it's not the same guy. And they said, oh, yeah, you can't do that. So I had to, in the middle of the whole process, I had to go back and rewrite the story using the information from the script so that it would fit with what you saw on the screen, and try to preserve as much of the artwork as I could. So it was a moving target. It wasn't easy.
Wow. What an exercise, man. That sounds super challenging, but kind of fun too, I'm guessing. Right.
I mean, it was about 10% fun and about 90%, you know, fucking jar of
burger.
Yeah, all of your preconceptions and everything I was intending to do. It's just like, well, actually, no, we're not doing bowling tonight. We're doing baseball. It's like,
right,
sorry.
Right.
That's great, though. That's great. But, man, I just, you know, everybody on the show has been kind of revisiting and looking over all of your credits, man. I don't even know. I mean, are you writing on a, you know, laptop right now as we do this interview? Because how do you ever find
time? You would have to.
It kind of seems like, you know, you're on the toilet. You're in the shower. You're writing a paperback. I mean, this guy is, like, so prolific. I'm like, good God. I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. It's just like, I really admire writers who just go. And just don't have a problem with being generative, right? I mean, it's just like, you do not have George R.R. Martin's disease, clearly. It's like, you produce, brother.
I wish I had some of his diseases. That would be good, actually. I mean, you know, if I could write Game of Thrones, that'd be a good disease to have. But yeah, no, I don't believe in writer's block. There are times, you know, where I'll set aside a day, and I write every day, but I'll set aside a day from the morning, and I'll go, yeah, I have nothing going on that morning. At 9 o'clock, I'll sit down, and nothing will come out. Nothing comes out. And it's 10, 11, 12. The clock's, you know, going around, and nothing's happening. And then around 3 o'clock, maybe, all of a sudden I go, shh, that's what I have to do. Now I get it, and it'll just come out. It'll be like a cascade, because I think, you know, people people acknowledge writer's block and they say, oh, I've got that, and it's kind of, I don't understand it, and I'm just going to not write because I can't, right? But there's always a reason for it. You know, maybe your characters are telling you they don't want to do the thing you're trying to get them to do. Or, you know, you're pushing the story forward, but not in a productive way. Or you're heading towards something and you just don't know where. And until you figure out where you're going, you're not sure how to get there. There's always a reason for the problem that you're having. And if you can figure out the reason, you can move ahead.
Do you think that sometimes when you're like, you know, weighing something and you're like, oh, nothing's coming, and you're in that normal thing and you're kind of like, you know, kind of hitting a bit of a speed bump or something, right, like you were describing. Do you believe that the subconscious is just kind of working away diligently in the background and that you're not even aware of it, but it's kind of just, you know, kneading the dough, so to speak? Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, it's possible that, I mean, you're working something out and you're either doing it consciously or it could be, you know, unconscious. I mean, sometimes I'll take a walk or I'll go, I like to kayak and you know, I'll go for a little paddle and by the time I come back, I figured something out.
Isn't that great?
Something to write that
great.
Day. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, if you're a bodybuilder and you know, you're pumping iron, and then when you're not, your body's still working, right? Those muscles, even if you're not using them, are still working. They're still soaking up calories. And I think it's a little bit like that with the brain. After you've done this enough, your brain just kind of works, even if you're not in touch with it moment to moment. You get to a point where you just go, oh yeah, oh, that's how I do that. Come on, that's how I do it.
Fascinating, man. I just love to hear people talk about their process, right? Now it works for them. It's just great, but I love that. But I just love seeing all of these different things, especially the comics that you've done, man. You've done so many different things. I mean, you've done like Green Lantern and Justice League. You've done a lot of different aspects beyond Star Trek too, my friend. I mean, really. And you've done some Batman too. Am I right about that?
A little. I adapted the Batman 4, Batman and Robin, with the one with George Clooney. I adapted that.
Nice.
I did a story in Batman Chronicles about the Batmobile. The Batmobile was the hero.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So I figured nobody has ever done that before. I didn't think they had, so I did that. I've you know, done a little of that. I did a little Fantastic Four story for Marvel. You know, a little Flash stuff. I did a superhero series called Dark Stars that was ran 39 issues in the early 90s.
Wow, 39 issues.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, back then, you know, early 90s, I think it was down to like 40,000 copies a month, and they went, no, we got to. That's not enough. Now 40,000 copies, I think it'd be, you know, on issue 1,000 already if it was still around.
wow, man, those are impressive numbers. That's wild to me. It just sounds. I hear like 39 issues. I'm like, wow, that's so much work goes into a single issue, and. You know, so much time gets put in. It's just like, you're a prolific guy, man. I'm telling you, my hat's off. It's really impressive.
I don't know. I feel inadequate when I'm not producing something. So, you know, it's just alleviating my anxieties.
Well, I'm guessing you really enjoy it. You must really enjoy working. That's my guess.
I do. I really do. You know, most of the time, I enjoy what I'm doing. you know, I mean, aside from the finished product, I enjoy the process. I really do. It's like, it's sort of like a puzzle, like a big puzzle. And, you know, how do you get this to happen? And how do you resolve this conflict? It's fun.
You know, one thing I've always wondered about is how do you kind of avoid the what I would assume would happen every once in a while, which is overinvestment in a character that you love that then might not make it, or a story that you love that somebody else criticizes and you have to change to, like, how often does that happen where you develop something that you're very excited about that you then have to change later?
Interestingly enough, it happens more when I'm editing myself than when I'm being edited by someone else.
Ah, you know,
because I have their, you know, when it's someone else, I have their concerns in mind. I know who I'm working for, and I know what the franchise is, or you know, if it's my own stuff, I you know, I know who I'm dealing with. I know what I can do and what I can't do, and I'm actually happy to have those extra walls to bounce off because it makes it easier. When I'm working on my own stuff, I'm very of myself because I'll rewrite more than I will when I'm working for someone else.
And I assume that you'll have versions that you'll then like take a look at over and over again and sort of decide which one's the right one or which ones need to be mixed together or, you know, which one actually achieves the goal you're trying to set for the character or the story or whatever it is.
Well, typically the version that I've rejected doesn't survive. You know, it's gone. And I've rewritten that part of the story and we're moving forward. I don't keep much in the way of rejected material. But occasionally I do have something that I go, "Wow, that's really good, but it doesn't fit here. It's not going to help this story. But boy, that's an idea." And I put it away and it becomes another story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that does happen.
It's like it doesn't work here, but it could work somewhere else, kind of an idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works really well somewhere else. It's just not working there. And then there are stories, you know, that I go back to every so often and I go, "Gee, this isn't working, and what do I have to do to it? Well, let me try this, let me try that." And, you know, it might take years, but eventually I figure it out, and then it becomes a good story and something I can include in a collection like the one I'm kickstarting.
Very cool. Can I ask you one more question, Michael, if I could?
Ask as many as you like.
Because you got a deep bench, man. And I look at, I mean, you've written like, you know, just one of the things that stuck out to me because I love this character. But you've written, I think, what is it, like three books that kind of harken back to like the early days, Gary Mitchell and James Kirk together?
My Brother's Keeper. My Brother's Keeper trilogy.
Yeah. I have never read those, and I'm going to be hunting them down like ASAP because I'm fascinated by that. But when I saw that, right, it made me wonder, like, right away. I was like, do you remember, and can you tell us, like, was there, like, a triggering primal Star Trek memory for you that, like, in whatever age, when you first encountered Star Trek and you were like, wow, and you just were hypnotically drawn to it? Can you tell us what that might be? Do you remember?
That moment?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the very first moment. It was when you saw the Mantrap on television, and I looked at that and I said, that's it. That's the thing I want to watch. And I didn't know it was the thing I wanted to watch till I saw it. And I said, that's the thing. I've described it since then as using a phrase from The Great Gatsby. In Gatsby at the end, he's talking about the first Dutch sailor that encountered Long Island, and he's looking at it, and it's an object commensurate with his capacity for wonder. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek was that for me. It was commensurate with my capacity for wonder, the most I could imagine at the time. I was very young, of course, but it just grabbed me. And, you know, I was watching it on a little black and white television, and it was still the, you know, because prior to that, you know, you had science fiction that was not very well done or that didn't take itself seriously. This was the thing that I didn't know I wanted, but I wanted.
Awesome, man. It's the clouds opened.
Yeah.
That's great.
And my brother's keeper, it's, you know, the thing that got me going there. First of all, I loved the episode, you know, the Gary Mitchell episode. And so that was always in the back of my mind. But the thing that got me going was I was thinking about what would happen after the episode. You know, Kirk and Gary are friends, and their families would know that, right? And Kirk kills Gary, and for good reason, of course, but he kills him. And then he, you know, he glosses over it by saying Gary was a hero and, you know, he died a hero. And that's the story that his family would get. But it's, you know, but Kirk's walking around with this burden, right? He killed his friend, you know, that you can't, you know, whitewash that. He killed his friend. And it's at some point in order to relieve himself of that burden, he has to go see Gary's family and tell them the truth.
Oh man.
And
that's
so that,
hard.
That, right? That scene was in my head before I started writing any of it. You know, I said, okay, at some point we're going to get to that scene.
Wow. Because, like, the only way he can move forward in his life is he's got to reconcile what really happened, and he has to tell the truth. It's like, wow.
Right.
That's powerful.
People. Jim, we're so happy to see you. You know, we're grateful that you were Gary's friend. And, well, actually, have a seat. Something we have to talk about.
Awesome. Your son turned into an angry god.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. And then
really, and he got the worst contact lenses anyone had ever seen on the ship.
Mm. Extremely uncomfortable to wear. Yeah, like the actor actually had
65. Man, you bet they were. Oh my god! Can you imagine?
Like hard plastic.
But I will watch that episode anytime it's on. I've probably seen it 50 times. And it's like you're saying, it is so compelling, man, because it's like they come at, you meet them with this great backstory. You know, they're friends, and Gary was his, like, more charming, you know, socially irresponsible buddy. And that's a great dynamic. It's so cool.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I love that relationship and that episode. And, you know, for a while I was trying to figure out how to approach it, you know, like, you know, and I've actually approached it in a few different ways. One is the, in a book called The Valiant. It's a Next Generation book, and Picard has to confront a community of people who've been affected by the cosmic barrier the way Gary has. And it starts out dramatizing that first contact with the barrier that's communicated to Spock in the episode. Like, you know, the captain of that ship, you know, everybody died. And so you see how that happened little by little. That's the first part of the book. And then it skips ahead to Picard's command, and it goes from there. But it's called The Valiant.
Cool, man. God, these are just I'm excited to dig into some of these, man, and track these down. This is so my cup of tea, Michael. So it's I'm coming to you late.
Well,
I'm discovering
you're
you late
now.
In the game, man. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just it's like just discovering all these books I didn't even know about, right? It's just been it's really exciting for me because there's so much Star Trek fiction sometimes it's like can be overwhelming. Where do you start and what are going to be the compelling stories that bring you in, you know? And there's just so much going on with, you know, the whole new rebirth of Star Trek right now,
right?
Because of Paramount Plus, it's just wild. So many different corners of the universe on here, but I like the old school stuff myself, man. So that's
I think of the new stuff, Strange New Worlds is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, they had a great first season, didn't they? They
mm-hmm.
did a lot of
that
cool
was
stuff.
Great. Yeah. It was great. Anson Mount is terrific. And he and Ethan Peck are, you know, I've met them. And you know, they were guests at a convention I was at. And sometimes, you know, you go to a convention and the guest will do what the guest has contracted to do, and they do it well, and that's great. And then other times the guest will branch out a little bit, you know, for the sake of the convention, and maybe they'll judge the masquerade. And that's even better. But these guys came to the convention, and, you know, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, they were still hanging out in the bar with anybody who cared to hang out with them, you know. So
that's awesome.
So they were really into it, and you can tell. You can tell in their performances, you know, how into it they are. They're all in.
Well, I suspect they're going to have a long run, is what I think is going to probably happen on there. If that first
I think
year
so
is
too.
Any clue.
Yeah.
And really clever writing, really good writing for the most part on there. I don't know if I'm ready to forgive them for Hemmer. Man, I love that character. I miss him bad mm-hmm. already. But I hear they're going to hire
something
else. So hopefully.
You know, in comics, in Star Trek, you know, nobody's dead forever.
That's true. So true.
I like that idea.
But they're great, and it's you know, it's episode by episode, which is kind of refreshing after it's gone so far in the other direction. It feels very Star Trek-y.
Are you I'm interested in that. Do you kind of have a slightly sour reaction to the kind of episodic tendency of much of new Star Trek?
No. I like it. I mean, okay. Especially in contrast to the other stuff is, you know, considering we have both options, you know, I like that, you know, I can,
you like the episode,
you know,
versus the serial.
I think I like it a little better, but
yeah,
but if I wasn't getting any serial at all, maybe I'd start to like that better. You know, both are great ways to tell stories, and I appreciate them both. It's great to have all these options.
I'm curious when it comes to older Star Trek. You know, for me, Star Trek Enterprise is one of those places that got to actually get story arcs that lasted more than 1 or 2 or 3 episodes, which I feel like is what we were kind of limited to in the DS9 Voyager days. Were you a Enterprise thing back when it came out, or are you now, or are you not a fan, or where do you stand on Enterprise?
I am not. I'll tell you what, I'm not a fan of Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
There I said it.
I'll
tell you why. You know, there was a time where I was writing a serial that appeared in the backs of all the Star Trek novels that came out. So there were two novels in January, and they both had the same chapter in the back, and it was a series of stories that would be collected and augmented and become a novel called Starfleet Year One. And then we would do Starfleet Year Two and Three and Four and Five, Six and Seven. And I was really looking forward to that. And just at the point where we had come out with the last installment and we were about to collect it as a book, I'm sitting at a bat mitzvah with next to Rick Berman's sister. Her husband was my friend's employer. And so I had met her before. Her name was Judy. She was a lovely woman. And we're sitting there, and there was talk about this, you know, Series 5. And I said, Judy, come on, throw me a bone here. Tell me something about Series 5. And she goes, she looked around, make sure nobody else is listening. And she goes, think 200 years before Kirk. And I went, whoa, I'm doing that. Starfleet Year One, I'm doing it. What are you, don't tell me that, please. She goes, well, that's it. So right from the get-go, I didn't like Star Trek Enterprise. And then, you know, I mean, I liked the characters fine. What I didn't like later on is their insistence on playing with continuity.
Mm.
There are millions of stories to tell. Millions, you know. And so what did they do? They had to tell a Ferengi story. Even though the Ferengi haven't been encountered yet, right? Why do you have to bring them into it at odds with established continuity? Hmm. And they did that over and over again. And I just said, you know, why? Just tell a new story about something else and leave the continuity alone. So that was the other reason that I didn't like Enterprise so much. It wasn't because of the actors. The actors were great. The writing was often good, maybe not all the time, but was often good. I just didn't like the way they butted up against the continuity.
That it was beholden to that.
I'm sorry?
That it was beholden to that. That, like, you had to be part of the continuity for it to work.
Well, you not only in broad strokes, you know, once you establish that it's a prequel, yeah, there are some things you can't mm-hmm. avoid, but there are lots of other things that you can, and they didn't. They didn't make any effort to avoid those things. They sought them out. Oh yeah, let's do a Ferengi story. What else can we do? The Borg. Yeah, let's do all that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, makes a lot of sense. What do you think?
And you know, someone else's mileage might vary, but there you go.
Yeah. Well, you're the one we have on the podcast, so you're the one we're asking, right?
right.
Cool. Well, I mean, I think we all have a lot of respect for just, as Paul was saying, like the amount of things that you've written and the diversity of things that you've written. And honestly, I, as a person who is a consumer of writing much more so than a person who like develops this stuff, the sheer creative kind of like willpower that is necessary to keep the ball moving forward and have all of these stories coming out of you is quite frankly stunning. And like you said, you know, it's a muscle you exercise often. So it's a thing that you do, and much in the same way anybody who's an expert in their field might generate amazing things that, you know, somebody else might not be able to generate. So do you generate these stories and have ideas that I don't think anybody else could have, which I think is fascinating to me. I mean, I love new ideas. I love new stories. I love fresh outlooks on things, and it seems like that's kind of the playground in which you thrive.
Well, I feel comfortable in it. Although I will tell you this about original ideas. I think I told you, you know, a few minutes ago about my experience writing the comic, where every so often they would say, "Nope, we've got that in development." And I also pitched to the shows. I pitched, you know, episode ideas with my friend Kevin Ryan, and we started out pitching to the Next Generation, and it was very common to hear, "No, we've got it in development. We've got it in development. We've got it in development. No, this idea, this one just sucks. But that other one, got it in development." So, you know, we heard that a lot, and they were encouraging. You know, whoever we pitched to, they would say, "Yeah, you know, keep it up. You're right there. You're just like a few weeks behind us." So we pitched to the Next Generation a few times. We pitched one time to Ron Moore at Deep Space Nine, and then we pitched to Voyager. And one of our ideas was Janeway plays Dulcinea to a Quezon Don Quixote, right?
Oh, and, sure.
And Jerry Taylor, who was the executive producer we pitched to, said, "I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. I have to bounce it off the rest of the writing staff, but I like that. Let me get back to you." So for hours that day and the next morning, we were on tenterhooks. You know, my God, we might sell a story to Star Trek. That would be amazing. And we get a call the next day from Jerry, and she says, "We're going to buy your idea.
Ooh.
We're buying it. We're going to make that episode. But I should tell you that if you had waited 24 hours to pitch it, someone else would have beaten you to it because we heard the same pitch just this morning."
Oh, man.
Wow.
Right? And so you guys win the prize, and we had to tell the other people that it was already in development.
Oh, man, it was Michael's downstairs neighbor. He's got his house bugged.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how he did that, but
oh,
yeah. So we...
That'll freak out, man.
Right? But, you know, they were listening to, you know, hundreds of pitches every year. Because Star Trek was the only show that listened to them, where anybody, literally anybody, could pitch to them. So they bought the story and the episode was called Resistance. It was with Joel Grey, who, I don't know if you know who Joel Grey is, but he used to be a pretty popular actor, and, he was the father of, what's her name? Grey. I forget her name, but she was in Dirty Dancing. Jennifer Grey.
Oh, Jennifer Grey,
So he's Joel Grey. He was in the original movie and I guess probably stage show Cabaret, and he was very popular one time. But anyway, so he was the guest star in the episode, and I'm sure you've heard people say, Hollywood, they took my idea and my baby, they crushed it and they mangled it.
Oh, that never happened.
I'm just sick to my stomach. How did I let them do that? I'll never do that again. Well, our experience was completely different.
Oh, wow.
They were transparent. They were inclusive. They invited us to the shoot. It was an amazing, positive, gratifying experience.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a big that, you know, that was on my bucket list, you know, get an episode produced.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, even with all the books that you put out and everything, to actually have it on the screen, interesting question for you, is there a kind of mental line between, you know, prime canon and the stuff that you write, or is that meaningful to you at all?
I wrote it I always wrote it as if it could fit into the screen canon. You know, I always treated it as if it were. And
so with reverence to like what had come before. Yeah.
And you know, and it had to fit. Like for instance, my Starfleet Year One book fit into the continuity much better than Enterprise did. Mm-hmm. So I mean, no, there was no difference in terms of, you know, canon versus non canon. I wrote it as if it were all the same, and I think for people who read it, they read it that way as mm-hmm. as well, as if it were part of the canon. To them it was.
Yeah, and it, as long as you're staying consistent with how the characters would react, how the stories would happen, you know, I can imagine that you automatically have an audience then, right? Somebody who has already bought into the system and
mm-hmm,
you're giving
right.
them stories that are consistent with the system, so therefore they're going to like them more or less.
Yeah. And they're going to be, you know, I always tried to make it, even if it was a novel, I always tried to make it feel like an episode.
Mm.
You know, and particularly the dialogue. I like the dialogue to sound like it was taken from an episode.
Well, I will say that for us, when we read books and review them on the podcast, whether it's a novel or whether it's a graphic novel or whatever, I think I'm not going too far to say that the thing that we enjoy the most is when you hear the voice of the character in the way that it's written, right? You can't
mm-hmm.
help
mm-hmm.
but actually read it in the voice of the actor who portrayed that character, because it's written so well and so consistently with the way that that actor would actually communicate.
I'm told that I was good at that. but let me say something else. You know, I don't know if you've thought about this, but to me, the literary experience is a collaborative process between the writer and the reader. Mm. And just as there are good writers who can really construct a world that you can live in and make the characters sound the way they should and draw you in, I think there's a talent on the part of the reader. People who are you know, big consumers of science fiction and fantasy, I think it's because they have a talent. It's not just that they're getting spoon-fed this stuff. They are taking the cues that the writer's giving them, and they're constructing a world and constructing characters and constructing feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think everybody is equally equipped as a reader to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would completely believe that, because I think the more science fiction you read, the more you sort of get the way that science fiction writers put stuff together and, you know, try and communicate ideas.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a good reader, what I would call a good reader,
yeah,
you know, you can, because when you think of, if you really go back and look at a book, most writers don't tell you everything about
uh-huh.
a place.
Oh my gosh, know? Yeah.
Right? They'll give you some cues.
Yeah, for sure.
And hope that you can fill in the blanks. And some readers can, and some readers have a harder time of it.
I will tell you that a reader that I, or a writer that I have been into recently, and I'm curious if you've read her. Have you read the N.K. Jemisin books?
I've read some of her stuff, but I haven't had the pleasure of reading an entire book yet.
Okay, fair enough. Not to put you on the spot, but like that mm-hmm. for me, that is exactly what you're talking about. She is able to engage you in exactly the way that you were just describing. So
mm-hmm.
Highly recommended. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, she's very
super popular.
Well regarded.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Jim,
Well, I think I'm back. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can hear you.
Wow, that was weird. We have a caller on the line. You guys want to talk to a caller?
Yeah.
Sure.
An actual fan? Let's see. Let's see if my gremlins have worked their way out of my system.
Hi,
all
guys.
Right. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
See, I'm calling from Kentucky.
It's the birthday girl herself. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And if you've been listening, we're talking to Michael Jan Friedman, the man, the myth, the legend himself.
I have. Now I can go look up some of his books to read.
Some great stuff there. Some really great stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you have a question or did you want to say anything to Michael Jan?
I just appreciate your work. Because I write, but not like you write. I write for legal stuff, but yours is way more entertaining than the stuff I write. So.
Yeah.
Same with me, Shannon. I write a bunch of engineering reports, but not cool stories.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, those are different muscles.
Right.
True.
So,
very
so
true.
What? When's your birthday?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Well,
mm-hmm.
Happy birthday. I'm sorry. I missed it. What
the show wasn't on yesterday.
what do you like to read?
Actually, I hadn't really read Star Trek until the last couple of years because I always watched it because Star Trek is a visual thing for me. But I've been
mm-hmm.
reading more Star Trek the last couple of years, but I also read like historical books from like authors that I like, historic figures of people that I admire. And like I also just read Stacey Abrams' murder mystery at the Supreme Court, which is also kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I like things that you don't know what's going to happen in the story.
Well, I think that's probably true. You know, we were talking about a collection of short fiction that I'm crowdfunding via Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
even as we speak. And one of the things I strive for is to make every story end in such a way that you don't expect. You know, I was brought up on Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone, and
mm-hmm.
that was one of the hallmarks of Twilight Zone was, you know, twist endings. Now, just because you have a twist ending doesn't mean it's a great story, but if you have a great story to begin with and then you can find a way to twist the ending, that's
mm-hmm.
great. That's great. So that's the thing I strive for in all my short fiction.
Cool. I should have to go look up some of your stuff starting tomorrow. I've got like 3 books I'm reading right now, so I have to finish some of those before I can start.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I'm looking at Michael's stuff and like, I'll order this one and I'll order this one.
That one.
Yep.
I'm like, I'm getting year one as fast as I can get it here. Michael, I'm looking at your Kickstarter page again because I want to make sure we get a chance to remind people of that. And because it's really, really awesome and there's some really cool stuff on here. But I'm looking at a detail on here that jumped out at me. Are you in Port Washington?
I am.
So
I am.
What, Northwest. Woo.
No, Port Washington, New York. That is where my sister-in-law lives on Long Island. Yeah.
No
and
kidding.
That's where my
wife
and her family.
What part of town?
It is Tom's Point Road, I think it's called. Tom's Point Road.
Yeah, sure.
It's by the marina.
Sure. By Tom's Point Marina. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
No
it's
kidding.
Like she lives
no.
in a condo there, and we get out there about once a year or so to visit. Stood in line with you at the grocery store a couple of times maybe. But that's
no
so
doubt.
Funny.
No doubt.
Yeah. I love it there. So that was just like, wait a second. I mean, I know you're from New York because you're not hiding that accent anytime soon, my friend.
Yeah, right.
I was just like, Fort Washington, wait a second. So yeah, you just get better and better, Michael. So, but I know we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to, again, just be this is a guy who's done some phenomenal contributions to the genre and to pop culture and in particular to Star Trek. So
if you like this gentleman's vast body of work, let's all be sure to go visit Kickstarter. Type in Thalos, which is, I'm probably pronouncing it incorrectly, but Thalos.
No, no, that's correct.
Which Thalos sounds Andorian to me, suspiciously. That sounds like a cool Andorian name.
Andorian.
T-H-E-L-A-S, Thalos, right?
It's actually
a Michael Stories.
Yep. It's not Andorian, but if you want it to be, it can be. You tell me.
Donate.
If you back it at
the
right
campaign
level, he can put an Andorian in there. So
I can. There are
anything
aliens
is possible
in there. There
you
are
know,
aliens in there. They might
Everybody's,
as well be Andorian.
Doing the multiverse these days, right? So you can squeeze anything in for the right option there. But this is really great, and it's super exciting because there's 4 days left on this Kickstarter. I guarantee you he's going to hit that total goal here because look how many backers are on here, and there's a lot of good opportunities to get stuff. So everybody listening, wherever you may be on the planet, because this show seems to reach far and wide when we do our fan shout-outs. It's Australia 1 second, and, you know, Newfoundland the next. We're all over the place. So be sure to check out this Kickstarter. If you like great short stories, I suspect that this is your destination to fund this and be a part of helping Michael create something really special. So pretty cool. But yeah. I've talked way too much, so I got to make sure that we get like Charles and Jim in here too.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to wrap things up because we still have a lot of other things to talk about. But I believe that Charles has the link for the Kickstarter posted on our Facebook page. Correct, Charles?
Yes, it is. It's up there.
Great.
It's
Thank
on
you.
You guys,
go check it
you
out.
Can go right to our Facebook page and help Michael out and get these short stories. And before we go, Charles, did you have any questions for Michael?
Other than I just thought it interesting. If all the genres you've done, one that I'm surprised you never popped into was Doctor Who.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I came to that late, and I just, you know, I think I've never felt really qualified to write Doctor Who. You know, there's a lot of material, and I like to feel, before I embark on something, I like to feel like I've mastered the material. And that's a huge task.
Yeah.
So it's not as accessible to me as some other things. Star Trek wouldn't be either if I wasn't in on it from the very beginning.
Right.
That access, you know, there's a practical aspect to writing. You know, I do it for a living. So the amount of time that I have to spend
researching,
right, is a factor in terms of what I choose to write.
Excellent. Yep.
Sounds good.
Well, guys, you can meet Michael himself at Farpoint, which is in Hunt Valley, Maryland, or you can head over to Trek Long Island, and not only can you meet Michael Jan Friedman, but you can meet me as well. I will be there, and I'm going to be doing a panel on how great Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, is, why it's the best Star Trek movie, and I'm also going to be doing a panel on why Michael Burnham is the best Starfleet captain. So if you want to chime in on either one of those two topics, come to my panel at Trek Long Island. I'd love to hear from you.
And should we also do a panel on Port Washington?
There we go.
Let's do it.
It's not that far away.
Maybe
best
Paul
time
can
to go
show
to
up.
Louis.
Louis, right.
Is it more of a winter place, more of a summer place? I think it's more of a summer place for me. But
yeah,
man, I just got to say, it's been a delight getting a chance to chat with you tonight and to discover this crazy volume of creativity that you've done, man. So thanks for being such a phenomenal guest and for all of your contributions to science fiction and literature, brother. You're a gem. That's all I know.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You only say that because you don't know me that well, but thank you.
I kind of feel like I do, you know? I feel like when I look at what you're into and what turns your knobs, I kind of feel like I know you to one degree or another, man. So.
Well, thank
brother
you so
from another
for
mother.
Hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight, Michael. We really, really appreciate it. Seeing you at Trek Long Island as well.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I look forward to it.
I'll definitely come and find you at your table. So please, everybody, head on over to our Facebook page and click on that link and head on over to the Kickstarter and let's make this happen. All right. Thanks a lot and have a good night, Michael.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all, guys.
Okay.
Bye, Michael.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Cheers.
All right, guys. Michael Jan Friedman in the flesh. All right. Time to do our fan shout-out. And if you'd like to be featured on the fan shout-out, head over to our Facebook page.
Is he related to Colonel Friedman? Or Captain Friedman?
Captain,
sorry.
Possibly. And if you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, that means your name will be featured in a future fan shout-out. And Eric, you want to get us started with our fan shout-outs?
I absolutely do. We are going to head to Pakistan to start our fan shout-outs. This week we're saying hello and live long and prosper to Mudassir Khan. That's right, from Pakistan. Mudassir, thank you so much for saying hello to us, and we say hello to you. And, you know, Star Trek is a universal language, and so although I do not speak your language, I feel like I kind of do, right? That's awesome. We're also saying hello this week to Oksana Kaminsky from Gloucester, England, and I have likely mispronounced that, but it's because I lived in Boston, and C-E-S-T-E-R is Chester. I can't help it. Osaka, thank you so much for listening to us and for saying hello to us. Marcus Otten, we're saying hello to you. You are in Cologne, good old Germany, you say. Yes, Cologne, Germany. I would love to go and see what's going on where you live, Marcus. Thank you so much for saying hello. And we are also saying hello this week to top fan Brigitte Moreau. I am French. 28 kilometers from Paris, 9 from Versailles. Oh my gosh. As an architect, I will tell you that Versailles is like one of the many meccas of architecture. I have not been there, but I hope to visit one day. Brigitte, thank you so much for listening to us and saying hello from beautiful France. Charles, I know you want to spin that globe and send our love somewhere else.
I sure will. Let's go to top fan Carlo Harrison. Hey, hey, y'all, Baltimore, Maryland here. I'm a fan Trekkie. Live long and prosper. Top fan James Pennington from the Motor City, Detroit, Michigan. He was also a top fan, if I didn't say. Brandy Wagner from Brandy, Oklahoma. Philip Silver from Halifax, Nova Scotia. David? Dave's not here. Okay. Patrick Garza from Texas. Howdy. Howdy to you too, Patrick. Lee Keeling from Hot Springs, Arkansas. Steve Evans from Red Oak, Iowa. And Paul Kentry from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Paul, where are you traveling to?
Oh, man, you know, it's like Eric said, we got folks all over the globe speaking different languages, but we're reunited by our common tongue of Star Trek. Isn't that awesome? I love that. First of all, a great big shout-out, and thank you for being part of our family, to Nazarena Beltrami in the Reggio province of Emilia in Italy. Phenomenal spot of the globe to live in. I believe, if a memory serves, that's like west of Bologna. So really, really awesome place in Emilia there. So wonderful to hear from you, Nazarena. Also, and this is going to maybe win a special award, I would say, to our fan friend Albert Kinslow, that may hail from the coolest sounding place I've ever heard of. and that maybe has ever been spoken on Trek Talking before, because Albert lives in a place called Isle of the Dead, Newfoundland. Okay. I was like, what? What is that all about? And I had to look that one up. And it's a town, Isla Omorts, named after a formerly inhabited nearby island, in reference to all the many shipwrecks off the coast. Island of the Dead. So how cool is that, Albert Kinslow? Thanks for being a fan and living in such a cool place. We loved learning about it. And to top fan Uwe Krohn in Wuppertal, Germany, it is great to hear from you. Live long and prosper. And finally, a great big kapla. And thank you for being part of the Trek Talking family. To Yossi Goltz in Israel, it is phenomenal to hear from you, Yossi. Thank you for reaching out and saying hello. I'm passing it over to Jim.
Well, I'd like to say thank you to Vicky Hill, who's listening in Brisbane, Australia. G'day, mate. We'd like to say thank you and kapla to Charles West, who's listening to us in Baxter, Tennessee. We also want to say thank you to Cliff Heine, who's listening in Phoenix, Arizona. And last on my list, we want to say kapla to Chris M. Smith from Tacoma, Washington. And that wraps up our fan shout outs, guys, which means now it's time for Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
And this is the part of the show where we remember, sadly enough, those members of our Star Trek family who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, we have 10 members of our Star Trek community who have passed before us tonight. We have first actor Arnold Moss, who, of course, played Anton Caridian / Kodos the Executioner. In,
spoiler alert.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Wow.
In the first
Don't
season
tell Jim
episode,
Kirk.
I know, The Conscience of the King, and there was also a very excellent book that, like, digs into this just a little deeper, written by Dayton Ward, Drastic Measures. You need to check out that book if you care about this character. And I will say that Arnold Moss was a fantastic addition to the Star Trek lexicon here. He co-starred in the 1949 film Border Incident, starring, yes, Ricardo Montalban. That's right. He worked with Star Trek folks before Star Trek folks were even famous. He also starred in the 1950 MGM film Kim, based on the novel by Rudyard Kipling, and co-starring, guess who? Dean Stockwell. That's right. Ziggy him, or not Ziggy, but the guy who consulted Ziggy himself. So yeah, Arnold Moss, excellent actor, kind of classic look, his nose, his face, like you just sort of like look at this guy and you say, he is a classic actor. I love that episode, Conscience of the King, and the book that we get out of it is so good. So check it out. Arnold Moss would have had a birthday this week. Also saying hello and happy birthday this week to David Opatishu, who played Non 7 in the TOS episode The Taste of Armageddon. This guy, man, look at his face. I mean, tell me.
One of the greatest episodes of all time, I think. I mean, just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
And did you guys know that in 1964, he was actually considered for the role of Dr. Philip Boyce in The Cage? So he could have potentially been our very first doctor that we see.
He would have nailed it, too. When did
he
would have
nailed
guy?
It.
He's so good.
He definitely would have. He's so good. He was actually a little bit typecast during his career. He knew Yiddish. He was sort of typecast as either a Jew or an Arab often during his career. But he actually appeared prior to his Star Trek appearance with James Doohan in The Twilight Zone in the episode Valley of the Shadow. So David Opatishu died in 1996 at the ripe old age of 76 years old. We do miss you. Great, great role as Anon Seven in A Taste of Armageddon.
Man.
Thank you so
the
much.
Best.
Yeah, just so good. We're also saying happy birthday this week. Actually, just a couple days ago, January 31st, 1927, was Norm Prescott's birthday. And if you don't know who Norm Prescott is, you probably should. This is the guy who was the co-founder of Filmation, one of the producers of Star Trek The Next Generation. Or not Next Generation, sorry. The animated series.
Animated.
That's what I meant to say. Yes. And we get lots and lots of animated series out of him. We have Filmation not only includes that, but The New Adventures of Superman, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, He-Man, Masters of the Universe. Filmation was all over the place in the early 80s. And Norm Prescott actually was at the center of that. There's a fantastic picture of him online with his pipe, which I think is very 70s/80s. So happy birthday, Norm Prescott, just a couple days ago. Happy birthday also to Jean Marilyn Simmons, not the Jean Simmons you are thinking of, Jim, but the one who actually...
The great Jean Simmons.
The great Jean Simmons, who played Admiral Norris Atee in probably one of the top five episodes of TNG of all time, four-season episode, The Drumhead.
Absolutely.
She is
evil
so
admiral.
Good.
Evil admiral all the way.
Okay, yes, evil admiral all the way, and yet with, positive motivations. She was... to me, Satie is one of the most complex admirals in all of TNG history. I love her so much.
She thinks she's doing good, man. She thinks she's doing good, right? She's saving us.
Yes, and she has this legacy to fulfill with her dad and, the way that he kind of did things before her. And, it's very complex and so
brilliant episode.
Such a good episode. Gene Simmons, not only known for this fantastic episode of TNG, but also known for many, many other acting roles. I mean, she was in Spartacus, you guys. She was in The North and South, which is that 1985 television series about, the blue and the gray type thing. She was in all kinds of stuff. Soap operas. She was
Laurence
in
Olivier's Hamlet.
Dark Shadows. Yes, and then later in her career, she actually got into some voiceover stuff. She was actually in the 2005 Miyazaki film, Howl's Moving Castle, which I am a huge Miyazaki fan, and I love that she crosses over into that. So thank you.
She was like the grandma, right? Yeah.
She is, man. Yeah, I mean, so cool.
So cool, man.
I can't believe we lost her all the way back in 2010. Her very last thing that she would be remembered for was something called In Memoriam. She was actually honored at the 82nd Annual Academy Awards and the 62nd Annual Emmy Awards in 2010, just before she died January 22nd. So, whew. Yeah, thank you so much, Gene Simmons. You were a titan, certainly. Also saying hello and sending love and remembrances out to Paul Carr this week. Paul Carr played Lieutenant Lee Kelso in the original series of Star Trek in the episode Where No Man Has Gone Before. He was in a bunch of other things, but he actually eventually made his way also into voiceover credits, which I think is really cool. He was in Ghost in the Shell, a Japanese anime film back in the day as a voiceover character. He was in Blood, the Last Vampire, which is also another extremely excellent Japanese anime film. So Paul Wallace Carr, not only in Star Trek, but also voiceover extraordinaire in Japanese anime stuff. We are also saying hello and honoring this week actress Bibi Besh. born 1942, died 1996, unfortunately lost way too early at the age of 54 years old. You say, who is she? She played Dr. Carol Marcus in Star
Can
Trek.
Can I cook or what?
Like the most iconic, right? Like somebody who loved Kirk, somebody who had a son, Kirk's son, of course, in Star Trek III, Many Things Happen, etc. What I didn't know before tonight is that there is actually crossover with our guest for tonight. So Bebe Besh voiced the audio release of Michael Jan Friedman's novel, Faces of Fire. So
whoa,
there you go.
Whoa.
We had Michael Jan Friedman tonight. Bebe Besh would have had a birthday this week, February 1st, 1942, just yesterday. So there you go, people. That is the kind of value our podcast brings. Little crossovers that are kind of fun. Did you know that she was actually born in Vienna and was part of that kind of annexation of Nazi Germany way back in the day? 1942. Became a soap opera star in the 60s and 70s, and then eventually made her way into an Emmy nomination as Outstanding Supporting Actress for a TV special in something called Doing Time on Maple Drive. She just had a lot of talent, guys. There are many credits to her name. Bebe Besh, check her out.
Do you know who her daughter is? Samantha Mathis.
Oh, who's that?
Samantha Mathis, really cool actress. God, she was in Broken Arrow, that John Travolta picture. She was in American Psycho, Pump Up the Volume. She's done like a ton of stuff. Really, really. You see her face, you'll totally recognize her. But yeah.
You see that face. Yeah, you see that face and you're just like, oh, man, I remember her from Who's That Girl or Steel Magnolias or Tremors or like, yeah, you definitely recognize it. All right. Well, happy birthday and lots of love and remembrances going out to Bebe Besh. Also saying happy birthday this week to Robert Mandan, who we lost back in 2018. He was the perfect Cardassian to me. He played Kotan Padar in the Deep Space Nine episode Cardassians, one of those Cardassians who was just trying to do his duty for the Empire. Not the Empire, but like, you know what I mean. The guy who's like trying to do good by his people and kind of gets sidetracked just a little bit. Also a frequent guest star on Mission Impossible and many, many other television series from the 70s. He appeared in many motion pictures, including Light Fantastic, The Carrie Treatment, Hicks and Boggs, and also something called Zapped. So happy birthday, Robert Mandan. Happy birthday also to John Mahone, who was born February 2nd, just today, back in 1938. We lost him just back in 2020. He was one of those Enterprise actors. He played Fleet Admiral in Star Trek Enterprise's fourth season episode In a Mirror Darkly Part 2, one of my favorite Enterprise episodes, honestly. Mahone also guest starred in Frasier with Kelsey Grammer and James Gleason and Joseph Will, of course, and appeared in the films Armageddon, LA Confidential, Austin Powers, and Zodiac. He was also actually in The Exorcist. That's right, the original, as the language lab director. So John Mahone would have had a birthday this week. Yeah, I know, right? Like deep pull right there.
That's a good one, though, man.
And our final remembrance this week goes out to actor Mark Dane McChesney. Mark Dane McChesney, born in 1954, unfortunately lost in 1999 at the very young age of 44 years old. He appeared twice in Star Trek The Next Generation. In both episodes, he had to wear heavy prosthetics and costume suits. Archive footage of his appearance as Armus, of course, we all knew who Armus was later reused in the second season episode Shades of Grey, and McChesney was born in Abilene, Texas, and appeared in the 1984 horror film Girls Night Out. And our very final shout-out this week goes out to actor Bailey, who played Magnus Hansen, first a human, then a Borg. That's right, Star Trek Voyager, fifth season episode Dark Frontier. I'm sorry, Kirk, I didn't mean for you to be assimilated, but you have a very nice Star Trek attack wing card. He's done some cool stuff, some B-movie stuff like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. He actually played or has done quite a bit of voice work, and he's done including not only Star Trek stuff, but he's moved into Transformers, which is another franchise I love. And he played Brawn in the Bumblebee movie. He was also in Rise of the Planet of the Apes and The Tomorrow War. So happy birthday, Kirk. So many birthdays, so many people who have gone before us. I can't even, you know, continue. I mean, there's just so much remembrance and love going out to these guys. Right, Jim?
Absolutely. And we lost a member of our family just this week.
Yes, we did. Annie Wershing, who was a very young actress, actually, 45 years old. She was the Borg Queen who we knew from Star Trek Picard. So Sunday, just this past Sunday, brought shock news that Annie Wershing had passed away. First reported on social media, the news was confirmed by Wershing's family. She played the Borg Queen in the second season of Star Trek Picard. Wershing died of cancer after learning her diagnosis in just 2020. After getting the news, the actress continued to work, and her recurring role in the second season of Star Trek Picard as the Borg Queen being one of her final things that she was able to participate in. In the statement, Wershing's husband said, "There's a cavernous hole in the soul of this family today, but she left us the tools to fill it. She found wonder in the simplest moment. She didn't require music to dance. She taught us not to wait for adventure to find you. Go find it. It's everywhere. And find it we shall." Wershing may be best known for her role as FBI agent Renee Walker in two seasons of 24. She also had regular recurring roles on Bosch and Runaways, as well as a recurring role in Timeless and The Vampire Diaries. Her final roles were in Picard and a recurring role on The Rookie. Surprising news of Wershing's passing has generated an outpouring of condolences from cast and crew of Star Trek Picard and beyond. And we have some reactions from fans and stars alike. Jerry Yarin says, "But a beautiful, bright light was lost today. I'm so lucky to have had the chance to play with the incredible Annie Wershing. My heart breaks for her beautiful family and everyone was lucky enough to know her. A GoFundMe has been set up for her family by at official ever Caradine, official ever Carradine. Please give if you can. RIP beautiful Annie." And in fact, Allison Pill, who we know as our most recent Borg Queen, says, "I am so lucky to have gotten to meet Allison Pill, Allison Pill has been lucky to meet her. She was funny and wonderful and kind and will be so missed. Squeeze your loved ones today." And there's a GoFundMe set up for official ever Caradine to help her family. "In this difficult time, she will always be my Borg Queen." Issa Brioni said, "Annie Wershing was someone who her light shines so bright without even trying. Her exuberance and immense capacity for such generous love for those she met was so strong and continues through those whose lives she has touched. Her talent left me in awe, and her hugs left me so smiling. It's so big. Hold on to those who you love, please. Life is beautiful and really short. Please donate, if you can, to the GoFundMe created by @OfficialEverCaradine, CARRADINE, for her beautiful family. Rest in peace, Annie. Michelle Hurd commented, Anson Mount commented, Doug Jones commented, and Lee Thompson commented. We have comments from Connor Trenier. Aaron Woltke, who has been on the podcast, said, heartbroken to hear of Annie Wershing's passing. She was a beacon of light in every role she played. Her work was some of the best I've seen in recent memory. My condolences to her and her loved ones. So let's just say that our podcast has been following Annie Wershing's untimely death, and we are with all of the fans. We have a deep reverence for the work that she already has produced in the Star Trek lexicon, and we will miss her. She did such a fantastic job as the Borg Queen, and I just lost too early. Right, you guys?
Absolutely.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like we kind of should head on to other birthdays, right, Charles?
So you want to see the living. Okay, sounds like a good idea. Let's start off big one right off the bat. James Cromwell is a veteran actor who's made several appearances in the Star Trek franchise and is best known to Trekkie Tech fans for his portrayal as Efren Cochran, the Star Trek First Contact. He appeared in TNG, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, and Lower Decks. One I didn't realize is he appeared in several of the Revenge of the Nerd movies. Countless mid-70s and 80s show. An interesting fact is the only actor to ever utter the words Star Trek on Star Trek. In the film Star Trek First Contact, his character Zephyr Cochran says to the crew, "You're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek?"
Awesome.
Yeah. Delphine Lee Ashbrook played Melora Pazar in Star Trek Deep Space Nine's episode Melora. These next three are very interesting actors because all three of these are voice actors. Patton Oswalt voiced Bot 73 in Star Trek Picard's second season, Penance. He's been the narrator for The Goldbergs, and so far, 237 roles, both in acting and voice. Gillian Thigmon plays Dr. Callan in Star Trek Lower Decks, Commercial Queen, for appearances in dozens of TV advertising spots, and also appeared in The Hangover. And Paul Shahir played Andy Billup in the animated series Lower Decks, and made voice and acting roles to him hot as well. Paul, who's on your list?
All right, I got a few on here that are pretty interesting. First of all, happy birthday goes out to actress Susanna Thompson. Notably, most known, we just were talking about one Borg Queen. Well, Susanna Thompson played another iteration of the Borg Queen in Star Trek Voyager episodes Dark Frontier, Unimatrix Zero, and, of course, Unimatrix Zero Part 2. So it's interesting when you see a character in the franchise who's been played by several different actors. So happy birthday to you, Susanna Thompson. Birthday greetings also go out to Tamlin Tamita, who played Commodore O in the first season of Star Trek Picard. So we're getting ready for season 3 coming up here shortly. Greetings also to Orville Cummings. Happy birthday, Orville. He played Lieutenant Christopher
in the fourth season of Star Trek Discovery. And I got a nothing but love for this next one, man. I'm just a massive fan of the great Jonathan Banks, okay, who we're acknowledging for his I just watched this episode a couple of months ago, Battle Lines on Deep Space Nine, and Jonathan Banks looks like he just came out of a high school play. He's so young, man. It's hysterical. It was just like, oh, dude, look at all that hair. Look at all that hair. Because I'm used to seeing him as, you know, bald as a bullet bad guy, Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And fans, if you don't know Breaking Bad, I pity you and envy you, because you have one of the greatest television experiences of all time waiting for you. If you've not seen this show yet, it is absolutely sensational. And he carried on his role on the spinoff show, Better Call Saul, as well. But absolutely legendary, indelible character, Mike Ehrmantraut. And he's been in everything, all right, from Buckaroo Banzai to the Gremlins. Jonathan Banks is just a living legend. I hope he gets just as much work as he can stand. Phenomenal actor and terrifying as well. So stay on his good side. And massive affection and greetings go out to the great Billy Mumy, okay? Wonderful actor who we all, of course, learned to know from his childhood role as young Will Robinson on the classic Lost in Space. But, of course, we're acknowledging his work on Star Trek as Crewman Kellen in the Deep Space Nine episode, The Siege of AR-558. But amazing. Will, do you think we could program the robot to make chili con carne, Will? You could do that for me? Oh, the pain. So Billy Mumy, great guy. Billy Mumy, I'm sorry, my pronunciation software is failing me today, big time. I know you're buried under many, many feet of snow, and the wind chill is like what now, 75 below, Jim? But I'm hoping you can handle these next couple ones for us.
It's getting there. We want to say happy birthday to Daryl Henriquez, who played Portal 63 in the TNG episode The Last Outpost, and more interesting, played Ambassador Nocklis in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. This next guy, he's best known for Lieutenant Commander Data. He appeared in all four Star Trek films. Most recently, he played Data's brother, Lore, Data's father, Dr. Noonien Sung. He played B4 in Star Trek Nemesis. He appeared as Eric Soon in three episodes of Enterprise, Alton Indigo Soon, and Adam Soon on Star Trek Picard, and he's going to be reprising that role in Star Trek Picard Season 3 as Lore. And, of course, we're talking about none other than the great Brent Spiner. So happy birthday to Brent Spiner. And I always save the Klingons for last, and I've got a couple here. We want to say kapla to Susan Howard, who played Mara, and is the first female Klingon to ever appear in Star Trek and have lines. And she appeared in the TOS episode The Day of the Dove. We also
so good, man. She was great.
So good.
She was awesome.
Yeah, she had a lot of guts.
Absolutely,
man.
Awesome.
She was really she was tough. It was a great introduction of for female Klingons, right? To set the bar there. But she was really cool. Great role.
She was absolutely awesome. We want to say kapla to Chad Hayward, who played Kakath in the Star Trek Voyager episode, Real Life. And the last Klingon on my list is Christine Rose, who played Jiral in the TNG episode, Birthright Part 1 and Part 2. She was the female Klingon who married the Romulan commander on that outpost. And you might think
to yourself...
Do
their parents know? I hope they find out before the first big family holiday dinner. You married a Romulan? What the hell is wrong with you? Get out.
You're without honor.
Yep. Exactly. Those mixed marriages get crazy. All right.
You know, I always save the biggest and the best for last. And, of course, tonight is no exception. The next person that we want to wish happy birthday to, actually, I've never had the pleasure of meeting her in person. However, she has been a regular frequent visitor to this podcast for a very long time. And she was kind enough to get me an autograph from the awesome Anson Mount, who is the man. I think he's just incredibly awesome. And she was nice enough to get me an autograph and send it to me. So that was really, really cool. And although I never had an opportunity to meet Shannon in person, I feel like I know her pretty well, chatting with her on the podcast over the years. But I think that Eric and Charles, who have had the opportunity to meet her in person, might have a few words to say about the awesome Shannon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Shannon, like, right from the get-go, she has this, like, energy about her, which I was so excited about when I first met her because I obviously also have a certain energy about me. And I feel like we hit it off right away, right? Like, we bonded. We decided we were going to go see that Picard premiere together, and it was just really special. So Shannon, you are an integral part of this podcast. We always appreciate when you call in, and thank you so much for being here for so many years and for being somebody whose opinions, like, honestly, we are a bunch of old white dudes, right? So anytime we get a like point that is outside of that lexicon, it is, we appreciate it big time. So thank you so much, Shannon.
Who you calling old? Old
yeah.
man.
Yeah. We, yeah. A long on the two.
You know it's
you step outside. I'll meet you at the park. Old.
Old.
I'll show you who's old.
Well, we've got a special chat for some of our fans. And Shannon's always up there telling her what's going on, letting us know what's going on with her life. Mm-hmm. Great chats with what's going on with her. Oh, I can't make it tonight, but I'll chat with you guys a little while I can.
Yeah.
And we still get to see what she's up to. So which is all just having her around. Yep, Shannon's another one of our healers. She can pop when she can, but she's all there to support us and keep us up.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, Shannon, I'm going to send out this very special Weird Al Yankovic happy birthday song and dedicate it to you.
Well, there's a punk in the alley and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another knife for feet. Seems that everywhere you look today there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is going to crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's all that you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake. Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Wow! Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Shannon. I hope you had a great, great birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you guys. Sometimes I do feel like I need to call in just so you have a girl opinion on your end.
Yes, yeah. Please. Thank you. We need you. We need you so much.
Absolutely. And you know, and it's always great. It's always great. Even if we just hear from you in chat, it's great to hear from you. So thank
totally.
You. Thank you for being an awesome Star Trek fan and supporting us. And we actually have a caller on the line here, guys.
What?
And I know it's late in the show, but let's see if we can squeeze in a caller here. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where you're calling us from tonight?
Supply, my brothers. It's Ray.
Ray.
What's up, Ray?
Ray.
I'm just listening to the whole entire show tonight, man. You know what's so funny about this, y'all? You guys have a good program, man, for real.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
I know the time is limited, but guys, let's put our money on this line. Who's gonna do this? Does the the Eagles or the Chiefs?
I have to say, from my standpoint, I do not care about either of these teams, but I have to pick the team that
quote
does
of the
not
night,
have,
I do not care.
I have to pick the team that does not make me cringe by their name, which is the Chiefs. So I am Eagles all the way, baby. Eagles!
Wow.
Chiefs is freaking racist, dude. Sorry.
Like I said, the Giants, the guy that came up, the last game they played that game, it was almost like they gave it to them.
Yeah.
I was going to say the New York Mets, but I think that's the wrong sport.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Uncle Jim. Wait a minute. How you went from baseball, how you went from football to baseball that quick?
You know what? Because I don't follow football at all.
That's right.
I know. So that's why.
Oh, I see that. I just want to say I'll give you my shout out. I'll say hi to everybody. I'll call you guys next week. You ready? Let us enjoy your night, okay? And be blessed.
Thanks a lot, Ray. You have a
good
day, man. Have a good night, and try to stay warm down there, Ray. Try to stay warm.
Yeah, I am.
All right. Thanks for calling, Ray.
Anytime.
Bye. Bye. Say hello to your wife for us.
Always.
All right, guys. That wraps up another show, believe it or not. And I want to say thank you to the awesome Michael J. M. Friedman for hanging out and chatting with us. And, of course, thank you to our very own Shannon for calling in and sharing her birthday with us. So thank you so much, Shannon. And thank you to Ray from the Bronx for calling in. We love to hear from Ray. Thank you to our very own Charles for hanging out and talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. It was interesting talking with Michael Jan.
Yeah,
there's a lot. Yeah, you have to go back. You're going to have to go back to talking.com and get the link to the show so you can listen to the show and hear about what he said.
You're not too far.
Rub that in, brother.
The gremlins are acting up again, and it took me about 45 minutes to get this thing back working. I missed all of it, so I'm going to have to go to
TruckTalking.com. But you know what, Jim? Nobody noticed because we just carried on the show.
Nobody noticed that I was gone?
I thought you were really quiet for some reason. I don't know what happened.
Well, I know Shannon noticed.
Paul and Eric just took the interview going, and they kept going.
Yeah.
Well, and the gremlins disconnected me. I had to call back in, so I don't know.
Shannon.
I just figured Jim was in the bathroom, right? I mean, that's easy with that. once every show,
for
right?
Minutes, it was on the
yeah.
You know what happened? My Kindle started talking to me and doing all kinds of weird stuff, and it just kicked me off. I was like, what's going on here? So anyways. I want to say thank you, of course, to Eric for hanging out with us and Truck Talking as well. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And thank you to Paul for hanging out. And thank you guys for stepping in and taking over when the gremlins kicked me off my own podcast. So thank you for that as well.
Hey, man. Community effort, right? It was great to have him on here. Terrific guy. It is really nice when you have somebody who's willing to open up and talk about the writing process and who's, you know, just contributed so much. He's written so many different things. It's just, you got to really respect and admire the work that guy's put in. Really, really great. I wish him the best success with his Kickstarter and his book of stories.
And I got to say thank you to Edwin for putting me in touch with Michael Jan to get him on the podcast tonight as well. So thank you, Edwin, for making that contact. I want to let you guys know that there is no new Star Trek next week. We got two full weeks to wait for Star Trek Picard Season 3, but we do have Strange New Worlds comic books to talk about, the Illyrium incident. And we're going to talk about issue number 1 and issue number 2 next Thursday. So please check that out. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe that. Please, everybody, try to stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Live long and
good night, all.
Good night.
Stay safe, New Englanders.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.